Now, common basis of world religions. Let's see what the word religion itself means. It comes from the Latin root religare or religere, probably. R-E-L-I-G-A-R-E. It means to bind. B-I-N-D, bind. To bind. Now, bind what to what or who to who is a question. A true religion must bind man to all other fellow men. Not only that, it will bind man to all sentient beings, not only human beings. And it doesn't stop there. It binds man to deity itself. So binding man to fellow men, to all sentient beings, and to divinity itself. A true religion will fulfill this purpose, will achieve this aim, show the means to become, or rather realize, one's unity, oneness with all that is. But we all know religions as we see today in their present condition, a caricatured condition in which they are in, do the very opposite of binding these three things to man. What does it do? It separates man from man. Religion becomes a constant source of strife between communities. Animosity and intolerance. These feelings are engendered when we miss out the true essence of religion and stick to its outer form. And what about binding man with all other sentient beings and the whole of nature? We find that in the name of religion, we destroy other sentient beings, whether it be in the case of animal sacrifice or in the case of polluting our rivers and the natural environment in the name of rituals and so on. So it again, instead of binding man to nature and other sentient beings, man becomes a destroyer, an exploiter in the name of religion. And what about deity? Which religion in its current form loudly proclaims as well as practices the unity of man with divinity? It may be there in the scriptures, as Vivekananda observes, you know, Hindus may claim that before the Arabs and the Hebrews, being a race older than them, they have hit upon the Advaitic tenet. But, says Vivekananda, but by and large, Hindus have not realized practical Advaitism, which sees, believes, and behaves as if one's soul is the same with all other sentient beings. The whole world is one soul itself. That practical Advaitism, that life based on that practical Advaitism is by and large undeveloped in Hindu mind, says Vivekananda. But why is this? This is only we are speaking of one religion, but we can take every other world religion and the same thing can be observed in every one of them. The same inner essence being very mystical and deeply philosophical, but the outer and the current condition of the religion being abysmal, to say the least. So why is this so? And is there no hope at all of reconciliation between apparently antagonistic religions? Is there no hope for peace at all? Because there are so many religions and sects and subsects, and, you know, no religion or agnosticism or atheism also being as religiously followed as any other religion, with so much confusion around, is there no hope at all? That's one thing that comes to mind, something to ponder upon. And if there is hope, in what direction does it lie? How can we help bring about a better world in which religions coexist and each person sees in the other religion a portion of truth as he sees a portion reflected in his own religion? How do we bring this about? What do we do for it? That we have to think about. On the other hand, if religions quarrel with other religions in their outer form, religion also does not get along well with modern science. HBB says somewhere in ISIS Unveiled that these two titanic forces of science and religion are engaging in a great conflict, war. There is a guerrilla warfare going on between religion and science. And between the clash of these two titanic forces, what is the hope for man? Between religion and science, common man, men like you, me, and others, do not have a sure foothold at all. They don't know where to turn. So religions opposing religion, and religion and science having a tiff. That's what we find. But ideally, what should religion do? What is its function? It is said that religion arises in its pure form as an investigation into the nature of reality. Because man has an irrepressible quest to answer questions such as why and where. Because he has to answer these questions, and it's an urge for him to seek an explanation to why and where, his investigations lead him to true religion. But just as religion for example, Ganga, the river Ganga or Brahmaputra, in its origin is pure, but as it meanders through the plains and the valleys and the cities and towns, and by the time it reaches the ocean, it is so polluted, full of dead body and industrial effluents and waste and so on. Similarly, religions as they were in their original inspiration and as they are now, the world of difference between them, as stark as day and night. So it is man's aspiration towards his own self, towards his infinite nature, the mind aspiring to reach its infinite basis. It is this aspiration and working out, investigations along these lines, which leads to true mystical and religious insights. But when we say investigation of the nature of reality, that's the phrase that was used, it appears, you know, quite strange that religion should have investigation, right? Because the popular understanding is that investigation is a realm of science, not religion. The realm of religion is that of belief. You believe something. You don't question it. You don't investigate it. You don't experiment and prove it to yourself. You believe it. Then you are in the realm of religion. When you move away from that to the other universe of investigation, experimentation, hypothesis and proofs, then you are in the realm of science. This is the bipolar sort of understanding that we have reached as to what is religion and what is science. Whereas, though this may be the case, unfortunately, today, the ancient religions, world religions in their origin, in their original inspiration, was not only religious but scientific in its true character. It was scientific in its kernel, in its core. It was a scientific investigation of nature. Now, by scientific investigations, we don't mean that, you know, we should not mistake it to be only merely empirical investigation. That is, modern science uses empirical investigation. That is, any investigation should be within the purview of the five physical senses. You should be able to see, touch, taste, smell, and so on, and reason out along these spaces. Then, you know, I have found truth. That's the method that science follows, right? But that is only modern science. Ancient religion also had science which was as rigorous, as authentic, as genuine, as scientific as modern science. But its purview was not merely the physical world, but the supraphysical realms. And its methodology was not merely empirical and reductionist, but it was something greater. It used senses and faculties in man which are transphysical, which are beyond physical. It postulated and proved aspects of man beyond his physical body and the five physical senses and mere, you know, mental ratiocination, right? Mental reasoning. It recognized faculties in man much beyond mere mental reasoning and senses in man much, which had a wider range and reach beyond the five physical senses. So it postulated this, proved this, developed and used those senses and inner faculties and investigated the very kernel of nature, the very core of nature. So in the ancient times, science and religion were not clashing, were not opposing forces. On the instead of that, science, religion, arts, economics, politics, all these things, and sociology, all these were not separate, specialized branches, but were different aspects of the one common investigation of nature. Today, science does not agree with religion. And within science, if you take psychology, it does not completely gel well with biology. Biology does not go well with economics. Economics does not necessarily explain things needed for sociology. None of this is aligned with human psychology. So there is all these fragmented approaches. But in ancient times, all these things were different expressions of the same body of knowledge. All these things were derivations, including arts, you know, theater and music and literature. All these things were expressions of the same body of knowledge. This body of knowledge was accumulated through investigation of visible and invisible realms of nature. Right? Which is why when we look at whatever religion that we take to investigate, whether it is the Vedic philosophy, Islam, Christian, Zoroastrian, or Confucian, the Nordic and the Scandinavian, any system of thought and religion that we take to investigate in the light of theosophy, we will find that there is a common thread which runs through all of them when we have sifted out the accumulation, the later accumulations and accretions on that body of knowledge. Each religion expresses a portion of truth, and on top of that, lot of customs and traditions and superstitions and various human vested interests add on to cover up the basic source of light at the core, and it becomes a mass of darkness rather than a source of light, right? But when we investigate religion, whatever religion it may be, we will find the same truth in it when we look at it through the lens of theosophy. So, like the Vedanta says that there is the same Sutratman which runs through the many births of human life. Similarly, there is the same Sutratman of wisdom which runs through all the religions. Now, how do we understand, how do we come to one's own confirmation of this common basis of world religions? How do we confirm to oneself that there is a common basis of world religions? Right? There are a few methods that we can follow. First is intellectual method. That is, we take up a comparative study of different religions. Just like we study our textbooks, similarly, we take up a serious study of the original scriptures of all the world religions, not the later commentaries and interpretations and misinterpretations. Go to the source and take up a comparative study of religions. This is an intellectual method. The prerequisite for this is that we must have an unbiased mind. That is, we must not be taking up this kind of comparative study to prove to oneself that one's own religion is greater than others. We must not proceed with such kind of biases in mind. We must proceed with the basis that, yes, there is a common basis. Let me try to find what that common basis is among all religions. So I will take up a serious study of the foundational texts of all religions, every religion. Now, this is possible. Many students have done it. Bhagwan Das, for example, came up with this excellent book called The Essential Unity of All Religions, where he has shown chapter after chapter, whether you take the way of life or whether you take metaphysical tenets such as the unity of God, the God in man, or the purpose of human life, whatever you take, as long as you are able to look beyond the mere words which each religion uses, the artha behind the word, the essence, the meaning behind the words is pointing to the same truth. He shows it beautifully. And let me just quote from that text where he is showing the unity of all religions, which is spoken of in Upanishads as well as Quran, the Holy Quran. See, this is what Upanishads say. Gavam aneka varnanam shirasya astya eka varnata. You know, the shloka starts with these words. And the meaning of the shloka is, cows are of many different colors, but the milk of all the cows is of the same color, which is white. So also, the proclaimers who proclaim the truth use many varying forms to put the truth in, but yet the truth enclosed in all is one. This is what Upanishads say, right? Now, further, one of the Sufi saints is saying this. He says, Jesus put many cloths of many hues and colors into a same jar, and out of it they came with all their hues and colors washed off, all clean and white, as seven colored rays merge in a single white light. This is what the Sufi says. Right? And look at what the Holy Quran is saying. This that I am now uttering unto you, the Holy Quran, it is to be found within the ancient seers' writings too. For teachers have been sent to every race, and aught of difference we do not make, for disagreement there is none between them, between these prophets. All that have been so sent, but to one truth proclaim. What is all these? You know, we can go on quoting other texts. All of them ultimately refer to common origin and the same truth underlying all religions, right? So that is one method, intellectual method of comparative study, taking it up in an unbiased manner, right? There is another method which Ramakrishna Paramahamsa followed. He, a great mystic, a great devotee of Advaita philosophy, he listened and heard to one Sufi saint, and he took up Islam, you know, temporarily, so to say, converted, quote unquote, into Islam and practiced Islam for a while. And how religiously he practiced, it seems, his clothes were changed. He would not visit any temple. He would not reside in the Kali temple precincts. And he would do five times namaz. All the necessary observances of Islam, he would follow them more religiously than the most orthodox Islamist. He did that. And it seems at the end of his experiment, he found in his mystic vision a radiant figure. Some say it was a radiant figure representing Prophet Muhammad, who gently merged himself into the being of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. So, Paramahamsa's direct disciple, one Mahendra, writes about this this experiment that Ramakrishna conducted, and he says, I quote, towards the end of 1866, he, that is Ramakrishna, began to practice the disciplines of Islam. Under the direction of his Musalman guru, he abandoned himself to his new sadhana. He dressed as a Musalman and repeated the name of Allah. His prayers took the form of Islamic devotions. He forgot the Hindu gods and goddess, even Kali, gave up visiting the temples. He took up residence outside the temple precincts. After 3 days, he saw the vision of a radiant figure, perhaps Muhammad. This figure gently approached him and finally lost himself in Sri Ramakrishna. Thus he realized the Musalman God. Thence he passed into communion with Brahman. And look at this sentence, he says, the mighty river of Islam also led him back to the ocean of the Absolute. What a beautiful observation. The mighty river of Islam also led him back to the ocean of absolute. Just like many rivers finally converge in ocean and also have their ultimate origin in the waters of the ocean, similarly, all religions ultimately have their origin and drain in the ocean of truth. So that is another method. Ramakrishna Paramahamsa did the same thing with Christianity also. He became a pakka Christian, more Christian than any other British Christian at that time in India. And he found, he had a similar mystic vision at the end of his Christian experiment. Basically, he was able to do that. He was able to achieve this not because he took up external observances of five times namaz or going to the church and making prayers and lighting up candles. That was not the case. Ramakrishna was able to do this because inwardly he had apprehended the one essence, one truth which underlies all religion. And outwardly also, he was compelled to make these observations, take up these observances and extract the good things from every religion, just as a honeybee gathers the sweet nectar from different kinds of flowers and makes the nectar, the honey, out of the essence of the different kinds of flowers. So also was he, Ramakrishna, who was able to take up the essence of all religions. So that is another method which some who are mystically inclined and who have already in their previous efforts apprehended the core, they take up this method and they have seen the common unity of all religion. The third method is a intuitive method. The first was intellectual, second was experimental, third is intuitive method, where you understand that all religions are primarily symbolical in nature. They are primarily allegorical. They are not representing, they are representations and not merely, they should not be taken literally, but they are symbolical. And symbolism itself is a great, great occult science. It has seven keys which open up seven branches of knowledge. For example, the same Ramayana, the great, great text Ramayana, can be read in seven different ways, such that the characters in Ramayana, the incidents of Ramayana, and the various names, the various occurrences, all these things open up a different body of knowledge. One key, when applied, may open the mysteries related to astronomy. Another key may open up the mysteries and hidden truths of anthropogenesis. Another key will open up in the same text the truths hidden about cosmogenesis. Applied to human being himself, for example, now we know that Ravan kidnapped Sita, and Ravan and his two other brothers, right? There was one Vibhishan. Think about what kind of nature Vibhishan was. Then there was Ravan. Then there was Kumbhakaran. Anybody who has an inkling towards Vedanta and the Vedantic psychological system will clearly find that these three brothers represent Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. Their very nature, their behavior, their character represents these things within man. And Lanka being at the lower part, Ayodhya being above geographically, also represents the lower part of man, his lower self and higher self. And Vibhishan flying off to Rama's camp represents that part of our lower nature, which is sattvic in nature, which helps us in our spiritual aspirations. You know, if we go on, you know, unraveling with the right kind of keys, we find the whole psycho-spiritual evolution of man, the whole journey, psycho-spiritual journey of man, hidden in Ramayana. Similarly with Mahabharata. Similarly with the Greek books, right? The Scandinavian Eddas. Any scripture you take, it is symbolical in nature. Should not be taken literally and quarrels be made out of it, right? So that is another way. Symbolical, intuitive approach to common basis of world religions. But the best method is you go to the science which underlies this religion. There is a science. The great rishis of the East of India or the great hierophants of Egypt have all investigated nature to its core using a different epistemological system than what science uses. And they have recorded it. And they have their own disciples and their own messengers. And they keep this body of knowledge alive in the world, age after age. When Krishna says, I come age after age, you know, Sambhavami Yuge Yuge, I come age after age for destruction of the wicked, resurrection of the righteousness and so on. What he means is, cycle after cycle, century after century, this body of great adepts who have investigated nature, found out the truth of nature, the inner divinity of man, repromulgate this truth in different climates, in different languages, to different nations, to different tribes and communities, according to the needs of those people. So the same truth is clothed, or portions of truths are clothed in different manners. Now, if you only take the clothes and the outer covering, there is only strife and conflict. If you go to the root of it, then and study the science behind it, and then take up the study of your religion, whatever that religion may be. You may be a Muslim or a Christian or Sikh or whatever. Then you will become a better religionist. That's what theosophy aims to do. If you are born in Hindu religion to Hindu parents, you study Hindu scriptures in the light of theosophy, and you find the hidden Gupta Vidya. You find that the science behind Hindu philosophy will shine out, and you will have the power of Hamsa, which will, you know, have the ability to take only milk and leave out water. Similarly, we will have the discriminative buddhic power to take out what is truth in the religion and see where other additions have been made. Right? That's what theosophy aims to do, to develop that buddhic faculty in us so that we find the truth in all religions. That was the second object of theosophical movement, in fact. Right? So just like, you know, we find a prism, right? We know what a prism does. You pass a beam of light. On the other side, you find it has split the prism into, it has split the light into seven rays, seven primary colors. But this theosophical prism is such that it does something like the inverse of it. You take any religion and pass it through the theosophical sieve, and on the other side, you find the common single white ray of truth. So, what does this body of knowledge say? It is some basic tenets of this body of knowledge which underlies all religion. And without these basic doctrines, our religions become a mystery for ourselves. Our religion become a source of pain rather than a source of enlightenment. That some basic tenets or some basic truths of this body of knowledge is karma, reincarnation, divinity of man. We can just take these three things, for example. Make a good study of the doctrine of karma, the doctrine of reincarnation, and what do we mean by divinity in man. And from this angle, from this perspective, from this Samyak Darshana, when we look at religions, we will find that there is no conflict between them, that they are all speaking of the same thing, and they are all harmoniously coexisting. There is no conflict between them. Just as we are all standing in front of the ocean, and we all have different containers, different shaped containers, different colored containers, variety of containers with different capacities also. But none of us have a container large enough to carry the ocean itself with us, to fill the ocean itself in our small container. Similarly, the ocean of truth and the different religions, which are but containers. And just like by investigating the nature of gold, characteristics of gold, chemical and physical properties of gold, we can know the characteristic of any ornament, whether it is a bangle or a earring or a necklace or a gold brick. Irrespective of the shape and size and other physical traits, in essence, it is but gold. Similarly, the different religions are but shapes and sizes with different degrees of impurities mixed into it. But essentially, there is truth in all of them. So a seeker of truth will not be prejudiced and biased to stick to his own religion and claim supremacy for it. Because what is he? His divine self itself is truth. And for that divine self, what is religion? What is mosque? What is church? What is a temple? It means nothing to it. These are all but outward forms. So this is probably the best way of finding out for oneself, proving to oneself, undoubtedly, the common basis of all world religions. Take these scientific doctrines, study them, and reason out for oneself, as Vedanta Sara says, and look through these basic metaphysical conceptions, examine the religion, then we will find out that there are no differences. You'll find a common basis. So we will stop here and take up any questions, or if any other student would like to add anything, the floor is open.
Hey guys, the talk here. Thank you for that. The one question I had, which may be a good discussion point, is religion a necessary evil? Is the question, since esoteric knowledge cannot be directly imparted, it needs some clothing, right? So, and also it is something that you realize while reading these words, and it is beyond the words, but some words are needed, some iconography is needed. Would we think of religion as a necessary evil, or is it something that can be completely dispensed?
Okay, we all heard the question, we'll give a thought to it, but let me try to put that question in my own words to see if I've understood it correctly. The point is, in the course of the talk, it was said that, at the essence of all religions, there is one truth. Yet, is it also not true that because of different temperaments, different needs, and different degrees of development among human beings, there is a necessity for different religions, as also the necessity for religion itself, right? Esoteric knowledge, truth itself, needs some kind of container, some kind of representation, some concrete representation to contain it, such that, you know, it caters to the variety of needs of the people, right? This seems to be the thought which Brother Ranganath has mentioned. I would request others to please respond to it. Give a thought to it and respond, please. Very good thought, Ranganath. Thank you. In fact, that probably seems to be the reason why there are so many different religions. But it also becomes how do we stop it from not only not serving its purpose, but doing its diametric opposite? How do we stop religion from becoming an anti-religion in itself that separates man from others? And the other point Ranganath raised was, is there a point where we can reach where religion can be done away with altogether? So please, others, please think over it and please respond.
Suggestion that doing away with religion, I don't understand. What do we mean by that, doing away with religion? Man is essentially a religious being. He's a biological creature. Man is really essentially a religious being, in the sense that he's essentially religare, that is bound to his true nature and self. In that sense, he's a religious being. How can he be separated from that? So that is a response to my response to the question, how can you do away with religion? And second thing is, human nature is different. Races have different temperaments and different cultural backgrounds, and different needs. So, to each race, to each nation, the great teachers come and teach as much as they need in the language they understand, in the metaphor and myths. In their traditions. So whatever ideas you would like to put forth has to be clothed in a language. Whatever abstract idea that you have to put forth has to be represented by a symbol. There seems to be no other way to the real man, no symbols are required. But when it is to be presented in human language to common man, we have to use language, we have to use symbols, we have to use metaphors, we have to use allegories. How can we do away with religion? How can you do away with all this? The thing is, the clothings are different, but the essential truths which are put forward in different ways, the means and the ways are different, but the truth is the same. As very nice example was given, that gold is the same, but the many ornaments, the many designs of the gold ornaments are different. No one likes to have only one kind of an ornament. Some prefer one design, other prefer another design. Some prefer, the earring, and some the gold crown, and so on and so forth. Human nature is so complex, and there are different degrees of development. For each degree, for each separate race and community, the same universal truth that be presented in a manner appropriate to each. There's one point on religious, the moral education that the educationists keep they talk about. They want to teach Bhagavad Gita in the schools and colleges. I think the better approach would be from theosophical perspective, first have unsectarian moral education, drawing the ethical precept from all religions, from Dhammapada, Tao Te Ching, Upanishads, right? Analects of Confucius, Pythagorean maxims, and Sharana Sahitya, the sayings of Basveshwara, Akka, Kabir, Allama. And then there are marvelous gems of truth in the epistles of Paul and in the teachings of Jesus, and especially in Matthew, Gospel of Matthew and John. There are gems in the Quran. All of them are very universal in scope. They all speak of karma, reincarnation, divinity in man. Man is an incarnation of God. Why can't we do this? Why should we thrust one outward garb of a universal religion on others? It is wrong. So if we do this kind of the essence of all religions, the ethical maxims, and present it to students, they will develop an unsectarian and a universal outlook. Is it not?
Very nicely put, Amila. Very nicely put. Thank you.
Does not Jesus speak of reincarnation and karma? And why does the church does not teach this? That is because of the corruption of the established religion. With what measure you meet, it will be measured unto you. With what judgment you judge, you shall be judged. And God is not mocked. For whatsoever man soweth, he also reap. Is it not clear doctrine of karma? And the epistles of Paul in Galatians, in Corinthians, only if you read in the light of theosophy, it is pure theosophy. It is pure ethical precept found in all great religions, mystical. And so, does not Paul say that you're not the body, your body is the temple of the Holy Ghost? And then, does not Jesus also say the same thing? You are the temple of living God. And does not Krishna say that in the Bhagavad Gita?
Amalar, you were mentioning about karma being in Bible, right? Karma and reincarnation both being in Bible. Look at how well it confirms, aligns with what Garuda Purana says, as well as what Quran says, right? Mm. First, Garuda Purana. It says, I won't read the Sanskrit verse, but the translation is this. Sorrow or joy none other gives to us. False is the thought that others give us these. Our own deeds bring to us their own just fruit. Body of mine repay by suffering. This is what Garuda Purana says. And look at what Quran is saying. Whatever of misfortune troubles one, of one's own doings it is the result. The atom's weight of good that you have done, that you shall see come back to you again. The atom's weight of evil you have wrought, that also must you meet unfailingly. Be sure no soul shall be dealt with this day unjustly in the least, and you shall not requited be with aught but what you did.
That's right. And can you quote the surah and the verse? Which surah it is?
I will get back to you. I have noted.
Please WhatsApp me.
Yeah, I'll do that.
And then I would like this talk and conversation in entirety to be posted on the website.
Yes, Shashank, you're audible.
So, just adding to what Brother MLR just said, religion, it's a part of us. But the problem is that when religion turns into bigotry, that's it. Problem is with bigotry, not with religion. That was the
That's right. Any is not only the thing with religion. You take any invention or any discovery, as long as man is in touch with his inner reality, which is the divinity within, his essential nature being divine, as long as he is in touch with it, any invention and discovery and any human endeavor will ultimately lead to good. But as long, once he is out of touch with this unity of himself with others, right? All his endeavors, all scientific invention, technological astounding works that we do, everything becomes a source of pain, sorrow, suffering, misery, exploitation, a source of trouble. So, yeah. Same case with outer religion also. Yes, Venkat. With Venkat's words, we will close.
And then after Venkat's, please close with a positive thought that we can carry.
Yes. Yeah. I have selected a Sufi poem for that. So we'll close with that.
To the speaker 5 years back at IIWC, on the same topic, there was a talk given by Sri Mumtaz Ali, Sri M, Common Basis of World Religion. There he mentions that all the religious masters, founders, they had a mystical experience. And he sums it up very nicely by saying that he gives a story of a God and devil walking together, and the devil picking up the truth, and then God says his days are numbered. And devil replies back saying that, don't worry, I'll organize it. So I think the organized religion, like how the Ganga and the Brahmaputra are pure at the source, but they get dirty as they reach the ocean near the deltas. Similarly, the idea that religion gets corrupted by the so-called followers not following it properly. Yeah, that's my point.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Venkat. Thank you. So we will close here. The announcement is next Sunday's talk being on the subject, the moment of choice, at 6:15 p.m. on 24th of July. And the closing thought, this is a translation from one of the Sufi poets, and he is transcending the various religions and creeds and sects and pointing out to the heart of man where the true divinity lies. And he is drawing our attention to that source of inspiration, the God with his man's essential nature. He says this, skeptic, that is kafir, skeptic or faithful, both run after thee, seeking the one great ultimate of all. Sober, inebriate, sane or insane, each one for the beloved one doth seek. Musalman's mosque or Magian's fireplace, each is the sacred shrine of divine love. Thou art the goal for which all are asearch. Temple and Kaaba are but roads to thee. So the oneness of life, that's the thought. So we'll stop here. Thank you all and have a nice evening. We'll meet again next Sunday evening. Thank you.